Hello, readers. Welcome back to another episode of the Books and Video Games Vodcast with your host, Danielle, from the Keep Calm and Read On blog. If you want to learn more about me, visit www.keepcalmreadonblog.com. Per the usual, I just want to inform you all that these are my opinions that I'm about to state. They are not fact, and therefore you have a right to agree or disagree with me. And I encourage anything that you have to say to be put in the comments below and to get along with one another. With that being said, let's start this episode. I want to start off this episode by directing a question to the Queen herself, J.K. Rowling. How far is too far, J.K.R.? I mean, let's really talk about this. Harry Potter is an amazing series. 7 books, very well fleshed out characters, a fantastic plot, a huge fandom behind it. What more could you ask for? Not only that, but it's complete. It's done and it's beautiful. Leave it be, right? Well, that's what Rowling has told us, but things have changed. And quite frankly, I kind of feel like Harry Potter has gone a bit too far for my liking. What with The Cursed Child and now 5 Fantastic Beasts movies, I guess you can take a stab at what this episode topic is, which is the new film Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And of course you probably knew what this episode was about via the title, but you know. This film was directed by David Yates, and the screenplay was written by none other than J.K. Rowling herself. It is supposed to take place in 1920s New York, and the main character is Newt Scamander, who would later write and publish a book called Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which is a textbook that Harry Potter uses in his time at Hogwarts. So for those who don't know, this was originally written as a charity project by J.K. Rowling. She wrote it, I'm not sure what year, but it was, as I said, a textbook that Harry Potter used at his time at Hogwarts. And J.K. Rowling wrote it just as a cool, neat thing, you know. It's kind of cool to hold it and say, oh, Harry had this in school. All the proceeds, as I said, went to charity, and that was that. But now, with the Avengers and Star Wars and DC Comics, Warner Brothers clearly wants to get in on the action. So they're like, well, let's bring Harry Potter back. Let's get J.K. Rowling to bring it back, even though she said she won't. But she has. Oh boy, she has. And I don't like it one bit. And this episode is basically me talking about why I think Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is an awful movie, and it's going to be made anyway. You know, the next 4 movies are going to be made, and I'm going to probably rag on them too, but it's happening, people, and it's making me annoyed. So let's talk about why I don't think Fantastic Beasts is a good movie, and I'm not comparing it. I mean, I will be sort of comparing it to Harry Potter, but as a standalone movie, let's talk about it, right? Let's talk about it. Okay, first of all, we gotta go right away to the title, which Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them makes no sense to this title for a number of reasons. It is purely based on the knowledge of popular culture that Harry Potter fans will know this title, recognize it, etc., etc. But really, the only relevant part of this title in the film is Fantastic Beasts, because we do see a lot of Fantastic Beasts. Yes, we're seeking them out and trying to find them, but that's not what the title suggests. It's saying and where to find them, meaning like where they're located, where you would go to find these beasts. I mean, so many places we could have gone. Not saying that New York is a bad location, but quite saying that it doesn't fit with what the title suggests. But moving on from the title, because that's the least of this film's problems. So you would think that a movie, a screenplay written by Rowling herself, one would hope that she would fix the mistakes of the 8 previous movies, the Harry Potter movies, because quite frankly, the Potter films really screw up how magic works in many ways. For example, we see Death Eaters flying through the sky. That's just not a thing. You see people using nonverbal spells way before they might be able to, especially the kids. And, I mean, the list could go on and on. Those are just the few things that pop into my head. So, one would think that the author herself of these brilliant books, who really concentrated and paid attention to these intricate details, would include them in a film. And not only that, but start afresh and move forward from those other films made. But no, we get the same director who directed half of the Potter films, David Yates, and you have J.K. Rowling herself putting the mistakes back into the movies. It's like she's justifying these mistakes. Quite frankly, it's annoying, and it's just lazy. It's just lazy. It's quick writing. It's clear that they wanted a franchise. It's what they wanted. It's not because J.K. Rowling suddenly had this amazing idea and, you know, she's like, all right, let's roll with this. No, that's not how it worked. They easily went to her because they wanted a franchise, and this is what we're getting, people. This sucky Fantastic Beasts franchise. Hope you're happy, people. I hope you're happy. My point in saying all this is that I really feel like, and I think I'm saying her name wrong. I think it's Rowling. It's Rowling, yeah. Sorry, my bad. As a Harry Potter fan, I'm ashamed. Anyway, it seems like Rowling had an opportunity to right the wrongs of the film's mistakes, but she continued them. Like I said, she stuck with the same director of half of the films who made these mistakes, and she herself applied these mistakes in her script. It's just, it's lazy writing. And on top of that, it's just like little things. Like throughout the movie, they're hunting beasts. At one point, Newt is in an apartment building and he sees this little blue, almost looks like a bee creature flying around. And he's looking at it and he just watches it fly away. And I'm like, wait a minute. I get that maybe, because the whole perspective of Newt is that he doesn't think the creatures are dangerous. He thinks the people outside are dangerous. Well, okay, that's well and good, and that's an interesting character attribute. But the fact is that even if he was like, oh, well, it's not dangerous, so I'm going to just let it go, that wouldn't be in tune with his character because he wouldn't want it to be free with the monsters he believes are the people. So, quite frankly, you'd think he'd, I don't know, want to catch the beast that's right in front of him. And one could say, well, it was out of his reach. Well, he's a freaking wizard. Have you ever heard of the spell called Accio? Accio creature. I mean, and that's not the only time. There's one scene where they have to catch this beast. They have to put it in a teapot. And so they're trying to lure it in there with a cockroach. And one character, Jacob, has the cockroach, and then the other character, Tina, has the teapot. So Jacob has to throw the cockroach across the room to put it in the teapot. Tina is a freaking wizard. Pull out your damn wand and say Accio cockroach and put it in the teapot. This is not rocket science. It's magic. A concept that was laid out so well, so brilliantly, in 7 Harry Potter books. And the author herself wrote the script for this film, and she couldn't think of that. And that brings me, speaking about Newt's character, let's go to the character, shall we? We have Newt, we have Tina, we have Tina's sister, I don't remember her name, we have Jacob, we have Credence, we have, and I mean, I already put this on the screen, but spoilers, by the way, but we have the, I don't remember his name, but he's played by Colin Farrell, and he's actually Grindelwald. So we think, you know, Harry Potter film, oh, we grow to love these characters. Well, maybe. I mean, I won't say I disliked them. I mean, for the most part, I think all of them contained something of value. But here's the problem. And it's a big problem. One that was sort of addressed in the Harry Potter adaptations, which is that, and I've always believed that Harry Potter would be better adapted as a television show. The reason being is that a film is just too short of a time to really capture characters and really capture these moments that happen in the books, because quite frankly, a movie, it needs to be restricted to 2 hours. As a Harry Potter fan, I would love to see a 4-hour Harry Potter movie. Believe me, I would love that. But quite frankly, that's just not how it works. And so things need to be cut, unfortunately. And with that being said, lots of things that are cut take away from the characters and take away from that connection that people just don't feel. I mean, I know my parents have seen all the Harry Potter movies, and they don't get what is so amazing about them. And I always attribute that to the fact that they didn't read the books. And I know there are some people out there who have still not read the books and love the films and would say the opposite, but I think for the most part, my feelings are usually what other people are experiencing. So back to the characters. I first want to talk about Credence. I thought Credence could have been a fantastic character, but the problem was that he wasn't explored enough. You know, we see him with his head bow, we see him with these witch hunters or people against witches and wizards, which there's no, first of all, there's no reason for them to act this way. They're in New York, like where, you know, maybe put them in Massachusetts, but a lot of this stuff wasn't happening in New York, historically speaking. And not only that, but like there's no motivation for why these people would be hunting witches and wizards. It just doesn't make sense with the time period. On that same note, Credence, or back to Credence, I should say, he just, we see like little bits like, oh, he's abused, but, or something's wrong with him, actually. We don't even see him being abused. I did step out of the movie theater at one point, so I'm not sure what I possibly missed, but from what I saw of the movie, there was all telling, there was no showing. At one point, Tina's in this pool of liquid that's like showing her memories, and which I'm going to talk about. Believe me, I'm going to talk about that. And we see her with Credence, and it's like, don't give us obscure images. Like, maybe just show Credence being abused. Maybe, I don't know, have something. Have us spend time with him. Don't give us, like, these confusing tidbits. Just show us. That's all you need to do, is show us. And they couldn't do that. And therefore, I found that Credence was a very shallow character. In fact, most of the characters were very shallow, but Credence was the most, I think. I found there was no way to really connect with him or understand his motivations enough. I didn't care what happened to him. Kill him. I don't care. Like, at that point, I was just like, I'm ready for the movie to end. I just don't care. I just didn't care about Credence. You can't just tell me, oh, this person's been abused, therefore I should care. Of course, in real life, it's different, but we're watching a story. Make me care about this character, and you could have easily done so. And I think Credence was the character they really butchered the most, because they could have made him such a good and sympathetic, quote-unquote, villain. And he wasn't. It was very shallow. And let's get to the real villain, which was Colin Farrell's character / Grindelwald. Once again, this whole reveal, the fact that it was Grindelwald the whole time, okay, like, so that's interesting. Like, I just don't care. So now he's Grindelwald at the end. Okay, but why would he want Credence? And we don't want the obvious reasons, like he wants the real destructive power. He had no control of that situation. Like, Grindelwald at least would have control of it. Like, it was clear that he had no control over Credence. Like, it was just, they were not on the same page, so I wasn't sure, before I even knew it was Grindelwald, what this character was going for. And then, how long was Grindelwald impersonating this person? Where was the actual person, you know, and how did he impersonate him? It wasn't with Polyjuice Potion. What magic did he use? This is a film about magic, so why don't we see some freaking magic? And this can't be a new identity, because Colin Farrell's character seemed to be a trusted ministry employee in America. So, what is happening? It doesn't make any freaking sense. And the thing was, I was listening on the way, because I went to a movie theater about 45 minutes from me, and when I was driving there, I just happened to be listening to a podcast about the show on Nickelodeon called Avatar. In the Avatar podcast, they were talking about an episode from Avatar in the first season called The Storm. And for those who have not seen Avatar, this might seem unfamiliar. Basically, this episode of The Storm reveals in flashbacks how the main character feels a lot of guilt about certain things and what happened to him, why he feels that guilt. And then it also goes to our antagonist and talks about his backstory and why he is the way he is. And it's a really good episode. I mean, if you haven't seen Avatar, I highly encourage you to go watch it. It's one of the best shows of all time. It's like, it literally is my top show. There is no show that comes anywhere close to how amazing Avatar is. And this episode, The Storm, does a great job in showing us how the villain, or not the villain, but the antagonist, came to be the way he is. And even our main character, it's just, it has so much depth to it, so much character development, and really good character development. Like, all of the choices that are made in the episode make sense. And on top of it all, it's animation, so we're seeing it in the characters' facial expressions and stuff. I mean, the levels that this episode reaches are so good. My point in saying this is that it can be done in a 20-minute period. Avatar is like a 20 to 30-minute show, and they were able to capture two backstories really well in one episode. And Fantastic Beasts couldn't even do it in a 2-hour movie. And I couldn't help but think about that when I was driving home. I was like, oh, right, I was listening to an Avatar podcast. I want to watch Avatar, because Avatar is so much better than this shit movie. It's just so bad. So bad. But anyway, I've been rambling too long about the characters. I'll say real quick that, you know, the other characters, the good guys, if you will, were interesting. Jacob, he's the comedy sidekick, whatever. He was probably the one I most cared about, to be honest. But even that wasn't much. The love interest with him and the sister, okay, cliche, tropey, whatever. Tina, I also really liked Tina. I kind of wished that, see, I know Newt is a very interesting character, and obviously we're focusing on him. But I was kind of watching and thinking, hey, why don't we get this from Tina's perspective instead? Because honestly, I would have liked if the film started off with Tina. Newt was fine. I mean, I honestly feel that, I don't know, Newt was Newt. I don't know, I just don't have anything to say about him. That's what I find about most of the main characters. They're just blah. There's nothing to say about them. There's nothing I can give. Nothing I can think of that just, I mean, they're so lackluster and boring. Compared to the characters that J.K. Rowling created in her book series, they're wet blankets. But on that note, I should say the acting was very good. The casting was good in this movie. I personally think that they could have cast a more diverse actor, maybe a black actor, or just not a white actor to be Newt. I feel they had an opportunity with that, and they really dropped the ball. Eddie Redmayne's fine. He did a fantastic job. But I feel like J.K. Rowling's going on and on about diversity on her Twitter, yet can't even do it in her film. Now, actually, I shouldn't be that harsh on her, because she does not do the casting. But one would hope that the writer would have some say in that. Which also brings me to the Johnny Depp thing. All I can say about that is, I mean, I've never been a huge fan of Johnny Depp, quite frankly, and the fact that this all has happened is not very surprising to me. So, but at the same token, while I'm not a big fan of him, I think he is a fantastic actor, and that's all I'll say. That's all I'll say. After everything that happened, yeah, he's an ass, but he's a good actor, so that's all I'll say. So I talked about the shallow characters. Also, the plot was very shallow. Nothing happened. It was just a let's find the beasts and do some little side treks. And, oh, right, let's go find this kid, Credence, who's a new invented concept in the magical world. Oh, okay, let's go do that. Okay, you know, whatever. Quite frankly, the movie felt more like it was like, wow, cool visuals and wow, cool action. And it's like, oh, that's Transformers, right? Right. And not only that, but on top of them not using the spell Accio, they didn't use really any spells. The only spell I can think of that they used was Alohomora. There's probably more. I think they actually did say Accio at one point, but not much. Not only that, but for a movie that's talking about fantastic beasts, we don't learn much about the beasts. We sort of just see a lot of them. Don't really learn, like, if we hear their names, they're very quick, and we don't learn about their properties. Like, that rhinoceros thing. What's up with his horn? What can it do? Explain it to us, movie. Explain it to us. I think this movie suffered from, the most it suffered from was, one, it was trying to do too much, and two, it was relying too heavily on fan knowledge. For a movie that's trying to be separate from a book/movie franchise, it did a pretty piss poor job. And let's talk about the whole, because J.K. Rowling, God, what's wrong with me? I'm mispronouncing her name. How can I be taken seriously as a podcaster? Anyway, J.K. Rowling really tried her hardest, her darn hardest, to flesh out this world, the wizardry of America. Which is actually really cool. Like, the whole concept of this film is really cool. It's just the film sucks, but the concept is cool. And it's a shame because she really butchered America for the most part. I mean, yeah, we got the school Ilvermorny. Name drop, okay, fine, like, whatever. But then we have the freaking Nomadge thing. You know, J.K. Rowling, there's so many other ways that you could make America unique. Just keep them saying Muggle. That's all you need to do. That's all you need to do. And this just points once again to my belief that this script was written purely because they wanted to become a franchise and compete with Disney. Nothing more. Whereas Harry Potter was a unique idea J.K. Rowling had, and therefore, it was better. Yeah, Nomadge. Ugh. It was stupid. And it's like, we're not impressed, movie. We're laughing. I mean, my friend went with me, and she likes Harry Potter, but she's not a huge fan. She's seen all the movies, read the first three books, wants to read the other ones, but just is very busy. And the thing is, we're sitting there, and she's like, the first thing when the movie started, she's like, this isn't going to be bad, is it? And I was like, I don't know, we'll see. And then we hear the Nomadge thing, and she looks over at me and she's like, really? I'm like, really? It's a thing. We're Nomadges. Can't just say Muggle, you gotta say Nomadge. Can't say something more unique about America. Nope. We are just not creative enough and not smart enough to come with a clever title for non-magic folk. We literally call them Nomadge. No magic. Because we're stupid. It's like Sorcerer's Stone all over again. Just leave it Philosopher's Stone. And on top of all that, let me just say that when it came to Tina almost being executed, why the F did they not just say Avada Kedavra? They put her, like, they put this prolonged scene of Tina with all these memories that make zero sense, only are there because of the Credence thing, because they were too lazy to actually give us scenes of Credence being abused. So they're like, oh, let's throw this in, that Tina just happens to have experience with this person that the villain also is very involved with. Yes, let's just throw this in and make, you know, a really tense moment. It wasn't tense. You knew she wasn't gonna die. Come on, folks. Really? Give your viewers a bit more credit than that. We're smarter than we look, believe it or not. We're not just dumb Americans. We're not just dumb Nomadges. Right? Right. And also, I should add that there was a scene in the movie. So I took a film class one time, and we were talking about shadows and stuff, and how often if a character has half their face in shadow, it means that they are torn between something that half of their loyalties lie somewhere else, and we don't know where, and it's something evil, or they're involved in darkness. If a character's all in the shadow, then they're probably not good, and their motives are hidden. And we see this a lot in movies. Even if a character, another film style or technique is when a character's wearing gloves, it means that they're hiding something. So the film that I most commonly think of, just because I used to podcast about Disney, was Frozen, because Hans would always wear gloves, and when he took his gloves off at one point, it's when he was revealing to Anna that he's the villain. Clever on Disney's part, even though I'm not a huge fan of Frozen. But my point is that they put these characters in an alleyway in one scene, Credence and Colin Farrell. And Colin Farrell was all in shadow, and Credence, sometimes his face was in shadow, and sometimes you could see half of it was in the light. And at first I was like, oh, cool film technique, they're the bad guys. I'm like, wait, this is stupid. This is so dumb. The film is trying to be all technical. It's an example of when a person knows all the techniques, but has no talent. And so they put the technique in there. But it's like, I don't care, movie. I don't care about Credence. You didn't give us anything for us to care about. He just looks sad all the time. Therefore, you're like, why is he sad? And the ending. It was just like, okay, that's it. All right. I wasn't particularly sad to see Jacob losing his memories. I was like, okay. Oh well, poor guy, poor actor, because he might not have a job for the next film. Unless they're bringing him back, who knows, but I don't think they are. So I felt bad more for the actor than the actual character. And, you know, the Grindelwald reveal, cop-out in my opinion. Jacob starting his bakery, that was probably the best part of the ending. I don't know why Newt gave him the eggshells, because, like, it's not currency, folks. It's eggshells, magical eggshells. Like, what is he gonna do with them? Are they silver? Can he get money for them? I'm just so confused. What was the point of the eggshells? Somebody tell me. Anyway. And also, like, when Jacob sees the sister, and he sort of smiles, like, looks like he recognizes her, and then it just goes to black. He lost all his memories, movie, remember? Like, there's no way. Final movie. Okay, whatever. Anyway, to conclude, I think that one could make the argument that the points I'm making, these critiques, are all coming from a place of nostalgia, that if really studied, my points would have no weight. That my points are just me being a Potter fan, a book fanatic, and just being upset and butthurt because my beautiful Harry Potter ending has been disrupted. And you know what? To some degree, that would be correct. But while there is truth in this, I'm going to counter this point and rid you of my bias by saying that the Harry Potter books are not the greatest books in the universe. Let's just say it. I don't think Harry Potter is amazing any longer. I still love the books. They'll always be in my favorites bookshelf. But quite frankly, I think that Harry Potter has a lot of issues. Too many issues to really take the time to talk about now, but just to name a few. You know, we have a ton of problems like, why are 99% of the Slytherins bad when we're told that it's our choices that matter at the end of the day? You know, why doesn't J.K. Rowling give something to the Slytherins? Why is she so black and white in a universe that she claims is so fleshed out and colorful? Why is it fair that Dumbledore always awards Gryffindors and gives them points, especially at the end of the first book, and shows them favoritism? Why isn't he called out in that? How come every single character ends up married in epilogue? Do you need to be married to be happy? Why is it that Creature can't leave the house unless he is told, but Dobby can in the second book? And, I don't know, why did Fred and George not see Peter Pettigrew on the map sleeping with Ron? And not only that, but why doesn't the map say Barty Crouch Jr.? The map would surely do that. And those are just a few that I wrote down that I was thinking of while I was thinking about this episode. But there are tons more, more technical ones at that, and more issues with characters and plot and what have you. Quite frankly, the series has problems. And right there, I acknowledged it, okay? I will definitely acknowledge that Harry Potter is not a perfect series, but if we're going to compare Harry Potter to Fantastic Beasts, as should happen since Fantastic Beasts is taking place in the same universe and is written by the same author, then maybe we could compare them in the sense that since Fantastic Beasts is the first in a film of five, then we can talk about Philosopher's Stone. Obviously, these are both first installments, and they both have flaws. One could argue at this point that Fantastic Beasts will probably be the worst film in the series of five because it's the introduction. You know, looking back at TV series, the pilots are not always good. I argue that certain pilots are often very good, but typically pilots are kind of bad. And first books, first movies, sometimes they just need a little steam and they're building up to something more. But that doesn't excuse them for being bad. But here's the difference with Fantastic Beasts versus Philosopher's Stone. Fantastic Beasts sets up a lot of stuff. You know, we see a lot of stuff happening that doesn't really amount to much, but possibly will amount to a lot in the next four movies. Philosopher's Stone does something similar, but Philosopher's Stone also has a very clear main character. It stands fine on its own as a book. We get a beginning, middle, and end. And sure, in the end, we're anticipating another story, but it could work as a standalone book. We have clear motives, a clear villain, a reasonable twist, and side characters that actually are very interesting and have their own motivations. We have introduction to magic, introduction to a lot of things, because quite frankly, it's the first book and introductions are crucial. We just are given what we should be given in a first book, in a first installment. In Fantastic Beasts, we're not really given much. We're given characters, we don't know much about them, and that's not to say because it's just one movie. We should know more about them at this point. They're only characters, right? They don't come off out of the screen. And that's a problem, unfortunately, with this. As a movie, it doesn't stand well on its own. And that's unfortunate. It's a shame because in Philosopher's Stone, the twist of Quirrell being the bad guy instead of Snape, it's very intriguing. It makes sense. And you can see suddenly why everything ended up the way it did. In Fantastic Beasts, the twist of Grindelwald is purely for shock value and nothing more. And it also is playing on Harry Potter fandom interests. I would love to have a story of Dumbledore and Grindelwald, and I do think that this could be an opportunity to explore gay relationships in a Harry Potter story or universe story. But for me, story is so much more important, and it needs to be done well. We don't need another movie exploring gay relationships that sucks, okay? We need a Carol. Carol is such a good movie. We need one of those again. If Harry Potter could only be that good. Or Fantastic Beasts, sorry, could only be that good. But most likely it won't be. I had a professor in college who one time made this amazing point. He talked about how books are the best medium because with a book, or I shouldn't say with a book, with a film, you want to make a film. Well, film relies so heavily on certain aspects like visuals and music and acting style and costs a lot of money, quite frankly. With a book, you don't depend on any of that. All you need is to go into a dollar store and get a pencil and some paper. And you can do whatever your heart desires. And you're not dependent on the money issue. Or the issue of visual effects and such. Or time. You can make the book as long as you want. And I think that could be the issue here, is that J.K. Rowling has said she will not touch Harry Potter again. But franchise demands it, demands more Harry Potter universe crap. And so we're getting it. because Warner Brothers wants to compete once again with Disney with their Star Wars and Avengers movies. And it makes sense, but it's just a shame that this is the path they have to go down. On a last note, I'm going to end this on a good note. The score was very enjoyable. I really enjoyed the score of this film. I have since bought it. It is on my computer. And I'm loving it. So with that being said, I'm going to end this episode. I know it was a very negative one, and I apologize, but I don't know what else to say. I'm very frustrated with this whole bringing Harry Potter back. Harry Potter's done. It should be over with. I'm a big believer in completeness in stories, and I feel Harry Potter is complete, and we don't need more of it. And it's not me just being nostalgic, it's that I long for new and more interesting stories, and I kind of feel like as long as we're sticking in the Harry Potter universe, this set of movies is going to be held back. And I very well acknowledge that I could be wrong in that argument, that maybe the next four films will be amazing and I'll be eating my words. But this as a film was very bad, and I don't see how it can pick up from here. That's it from me. If you want to learn more about me, visit my blog, keepcalmreadonblog.com, and subscribe to this channel. You can hear all my vodcasts, watch them, I should say, on this channel. And also, I now have an iTunes feed where you can listen to the audio of these episodes, because sometimes you're busy and you don't want to watch a video game. Maybe you just want to listen, so there you go. They're on iTunes. And that's it from me. I will talk to you all next time, fine listeners. And remember, having fun isn't hard as long as you have a library card.